Blog Talk Radio.
What is up, everybody? It is another Tuesday night, a real fun edition of the Pro Cross Face-Off, presented by Laxworm Radio and MLO Radio. I'm James Boger. We're going to be hanging out tonight and having a pretty fun show, I think. I'm really excited about it. We're going to be recapping week two of the MLL season. We got Tommy Palisade coming on 8:15, Anthony Kelly coming on at 8:40. I'm joined by Tom Bovey and Joe Keegan, as always, and we're going to recap exactly what happened this past weekend because, in my opinion, there were two games and one extreme blowout, whenever you really get down to it. It was fun. Tom and I actually got the unique opportunity to really get involved in the Ohio Machine and Denver Outlaws game. We were both in Ohio, and it was a really cool experience getting to chat with some of the players and really kind of see things from a field level. I'm sure you guys saw a couple of the pictures on Lax Dirt's Twitter, and it was just really kind of fun. And first off, what I want to get from you guys, oh, by the way, welcoming in Tom and Joe, as always, but, I mean, just general opinions. Before we welcome in Tommy coming in at 8:15, guys, this week was kind of insane because we had a couple games that were really close and kind of bored down toward the end. We'll get into what happened to Ohio later as far as the ins and outs of instant replay, referees, and all the other stuff that, you know, we kind of saw on the field. But in general, like, this week was actually kind of fun. We saw New York really establish themselves as far as being a dominant presence. And I kind of want to get you guys' general opinions on this week and what stood out to you most before Palisade comes on. Joe, throwing it to you real quick. Just general impressions on kind of how the week went for you and exactly kind of what you thought about the week.
Yeah, it was an interesting week. It was our first look at Florida and Chesapeake, and I guess we saw a lot of what we expected to see. Trouble clearing the ball from Florida, which they, I mean, Coach Ross fully acknowledged on the coach's call last week that that was going to happen. They just haven't really had much time to simulate those sort of full field sort of drills when you go from making the save, turning that into offense with the substitution game and everything. You really just can't do that with one team. So they've been a little short in their training camp, and they just haven't had opportunities to simulate those game speed scenarios, and that really hurt them. And then you see Rochester coming off not their best win against Charlotte, but they pulled it out in the end. They battled back, and then they just came out flat. I think they were down by 6 or 7 before they really even got an offensive possession, just because Greg Granlien was dominant. And then, I mean, we expected Ohio and Denver to be a great game, and it was. That last 2 minutes was insane.
Yeah, some of the things this weekend were a little crazy. And one thing that I want to drop in right now, one thing that kind of amazed me is the fact that Tom and I had the opportunity to sit down with Coach Davis of the Machine after their game. And it's amazing how the league has transitioned right now in a general sense into a almost like a face-off hierarchy, because you have top guys, you have middle guys, and you have bad guys. And at some point in time, all of these teams are going to have to face off against a guy like Greg Granlien or Anthony Kelly, who's coming on at 8:40. I want to ask him about this because it's amazing how bad everyone else is against these guys. And you can say a lot about mediocre guys facing off against one another, but one thing that really stood out to me was the fact that Granlien and Kelly seem to be head and shoulders above everybody else. And it's no secret that they are also on two of the most dominant teams in the league right now, and two of the teams that we see moving forward being at least deep in the playoffs, if not in the finals against each other. And it really comes back to the fact that added possessions mean added value to your offense. And when you have offenses like Denver and New York, it really makes a big difference, and every other team's at a disadvantage. I mean, we saw Anthony Kelly do a whole lot of amazing things this weekend. And, I mean, Tom, I know we saw Anthony Kelly go legitimately a quarter and a half and not lose a faceoff. Besides the game this weekend that you and I were at, what really stood out to you, Tom, as far as this weekend was concerned?
Well, I mean, you've said a couple times now that we had two really close games and one blowout. I don't know that we had two really close games. I kind of thought that Chesapeake kind of New Yorked Florida in a little bit if it wasn't for Queener. I'm using New York as a phrase now, the way they put it on Rochester. But Chesapeake really seriously outplayed Florida in that game, legitimately outshot them. It took an amazing effort from Red Queener to get them that win, or not that win, but to keep them in that game. That easily could have been a 20-8 game. It didn't look good for them. Joe pointed out some of the problems, and there's numerous more. And New York, wow. Just wow. I mean, if you're at home listening to this, cue up the ESPN3 video of that game, watch the first quarter, and just, if you're a Rochester fan like I am, cry. If you're a fan of good lacrosse like I am, just be absolutely amazed at the utter domination that took place for 15 straight minutes. It's an embarrassment of riches on the New York side.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there were two games and there was one exhibition. And the exhibition really was, I mean, Joe, I want to ask you real quick. We're going to get in this game here a little bit. But did you think that this team would gel like this quickly against a team like Rochester, which, you know, they have a little transition as far as players are concerned. But at some point in time, 11-0, my goodness gracious, like that had to surprise you. It shocked Tom and I whenever we were just sitting on the sidelines of another game saying, like, oh, my God, what's going on? Did you think that New York was going to be able to kind of pull it together this quick and look this fluid on offense?
No, to be honest, I didn't. And it's not that I'm skeptical of the Lizards or their coaching staff or any of the players on that team. But like you guys, I wasn't at the Ohio-Denver game, but I watched that game live. So I watched New York and Rochester Sunday night after I knew the score. And I didn't know the score after one quarter, but I knew it was basically out of hand at that point. And it was a lot worse than I expected it to be. Like, it almost seemed worse than 11-0, if that is even possible. They were just chilling. I mean, we tweeted it out today. I put it in my column, their shot chart through 2 weeks. If you compare their offensive and defensive shot charts, I mean, those are the two extremes you'll find around the league. Like, their defense, people out of high-scoring areas, better than any team in the league, and their offense is getting to those areas. They're making one more pass. Guys like Rabel and Pinnell are showing up in the assist column. Rabel, Pinnell, and Karate are the three guys showing up in the assist column more so than anyone. And they get a lot of guys who aren't really role players. I mean, we're going to have Tommy Palasek on later. Every guy besides those three studs, if that's what we're going to call them, does multiple things well. Like, Tommy Palasek can dodge to create his own shot, but then he's also a very good inside player. You got Matt Poske, one of the savviest off-ball players in the league. It wasn't a question of whether they would figure it out, but it was definitely a question of when they would. And I don't think anybody expected them to be outscoring an opponent. Last year's championship runner-up, the Rochester Rattlers, 11-0 in a quarter. Like, we always talk about the parity of this league. I don't care who you're missing. You shouldn't lose a quarter 11-0.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. And, Tom, I want to throw this right over to you because I want to talk about this game and then get Tommy on and see what he thought about it, because I think this was the game, to me, that was not the most necessarily interesting, but also just the most force of nature. And one of those situations where it was like a lookout to the rest of the league, because if you look at the players that we thought were going to be dominating this team in Pinnell and Rabel, they didn't score in the first quarter. They didn't score, and yet they were up 11-0. Everyone else did stuff. And so I want to ask you, Tom, how important is that for this team going forward that they – I mean, they have a superstar cast, but yet the big guys, Crotty scored he scored the first goal, but everyone else did great things for this team. How important do you think that is for New York moving forward, as far as potentially being a juggernaut moving forward?
Well, they're going to have all the confidence in the world after this game. They get to turn around and play Rochester again, so it's just going to be another momentum thing. What they're able to do, how they're able to do it, it's incredibly impressive. And you got to imagine, you know, I talked to Coach Spelina, and he flat said the guys are buying it. They've decided that they're going to be what they should be. They're buying into the system, they're buying into the plays, they're buying into the coaching. They're becoming what they could be, and it's really early. You know, they got some rookies that are really impressive that should potentially see meaningful minutes on an MLL team. And I don't know how you crack this lineup. I don't know how you change it. I don't know how you make it better. It's absolutely incredible what they've been able to do so far. And I mean, it's not just on offense. It's not just at faceoff. It's defense. It's in goal. It's everywhere on the field. New York has an advantage at this point, and I got to imagine teams are looking at that, and nobody wants to play it. It's week two. It's week two of the season, and nobody wants to play them.
Well, what's really fun about that is the fact that, Tom, your team had to play them last week and got destroyed. Now you go to New York, which is a different demon now that team has enough confidence. And what I want to do, Joe, I actually want to talk to you about the defense, because you mentioned it earlier, is the fact that this defense also is playing superb. I mean, Jordan Wolf had 5 points. He had one goal, 4 assists. But if you look at what he did against Charlotte the week before, he was a force coming from the X in every way, shape, and form. He was involved in every play Rochester ran throughout the course of that game. And yet New York seemed to, I guess they didn't limit him, but they minimized the effort that he's putting in and really made this team really run offense in a couple different ways, didn't let him score a lot of goals. What did you make about New York's defense? Because I think that's an underrated thing about this team heading forward. Their offense is great, but their defense has a real chance to be elite as well. What did you make about New York's defense?
Yeah, their defense absolutely has a chance to be elite. I think it starts with a couple guys. One, you sort of alluded to it, Joe Fletcher. He's one of the best cover guys in the league. I'm not sure that Jordan Wolf was really neutralized or limited or in any sense taken out of this game. He produced over half of Rochester's offense with a goal and 4 assists. But I thought Fletcher did a pretty nice job on it. I mean, if you watch a game, a lot of that didn't really come one-on-one with Fletcher. And when you have Fletcher and you have Kyle Hartzell at long stick midfield, those two guys win their matchups more often than not. And those are two of the most important matchups on the field, the opposing team's top midfielder and top attackman. They have the athleticism and the footwork to match up with anyone in the league. And, I mean, you see a guy like Kyle Harrison last week, week one, with 0 goals, 0 assists, because Kyle Hartzell just blanketed him. And then week two, you see Dave Lawson. He got a goal and an assist, but both were on the extra man. So, I mean, the Lizards didn't play much defense in that game next to Greg Renlian, but Kyle Hartzell played an awesome game. He basically has 2 shutouts this year. And he did leave with an injury in the third quarter against Rochester, so I wrote about that. If he is hurt for a few weeks here, that's going to be tough for them because he's been dominant. I think him and Fletcher might be the best, you know, like top cover, top LSM tandem in the league that can just eliminate basically most teams' two primary sources of offense. You know, most teams have a guy who they like to dodge with up top and a guy who they like to dodge with behind. And when those options aren't there and you have to start looking elsewhere, that's where a lot of offenses struggle to draw slides and create offense.
Well, I'll tell you what, the game seemed like it was an incredible victory for the Lizards. And with that being said, I do want to welcome in Tommy Palasek. And Tommy, thanks for making the time to come on and talk with us. Congratulations on the win. And first off, I just want to ask you how great it felt. You scored 5 goals throughout the course of this game, and this seemed to be the first game you guys like really got to gel. You guys are 2-0, but this seemed to be the game that your team seemed to really kind of get it all together. How fun was it to be out there being up 11-0 and kind of just enjoying the fact you guys are playing together at a high level?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, thanks for having me. Excited to be on, but yeah, just as excited about this past weekend's game. From an offensive standpoint, I think it's got to start with Greg Grenly and how dominant he was at the X. Because, you know, I've been in games before at certain levels where, you know, you just don't see the ball. And I'm sure Jordan Wolf feels that way now about after the first quarter. If you don't get the ball, you don't get those opportunities to even have a chance to click. So being able to stand there and watch and say, hey, thing every single time, it allowed us to do and space out the field the way we wanted to. It allowed us to let other guys dodge, not forcing the ball into one or two guys' sticks. We don't have the opportunities. But, you know, it feels good. You're fortunate enough to get that type of lead on a team early on. With all those things going for you, as you just said, with our defense playing well and the face-offs going our way, as an offensive guy, that's really all you can ask for.
I mean, one thing that I noticed in this game was the fact that we talked about this a second ago, was the fact that Rabel and Pinnell didn't score until midway through the second quarter. How instrumental is it for you guys? And not to say you guys have to have one of those guys on the field at any point in time, but you guys are not getting the same defensive, I guess, mindset from other teams, and it frees up a lot of really talented guys because obviously you know how to score a lot of points in a game. How much fun is it to play with those guys to get passes in good situations and really kind of almost kind of fly under the radar? Because I feel like a lot of people are talking about Crotty, a lot of people are talking about Pinnell, a lot of people are talking about Rabel. And I feel like you are one of the guys who are really going to benefit and have a great season, not only because of those guys, but because you have the talent to do so. How has it been playing with all those guys so far this year?
Yeah, of course. I think you just kind of hit the nail on the head. I feel that I have, you know, the talent and the physical ability to, you know, really attack a defense in a number of different ways, whether it be, you know, dodging, scoring, you know, moving off ball, opening up guys. I've always kind of prided myself on my versatility. So it's nice because I have the mindset that even if those, you know, if we didn't have other guys, that I would be the one to step up and do what I have to do to, you know, for our offense to produce. But with those guys, they draw enough attention where, you know, if we have the correct spacing and they beat their matchup, the defense has, there's not much they can do but slide from, you know, 5-10 yards away and make it a long slide. Where now, as long as guys just move ball, make single passes, it makes for a lot of fun on offense because, you know, those guys, Ned, Paul, Rob, they get all the credit that they deserve and the attention they deserve when they're carrying the ball. It makes it kind of easier for us to just kind of step into places and, you know, make the single passes. And as good as those guys are carrying the ball and they're doing an awesome job, just like I'm sure Ned or Rob or any of them would tell you right now, we have 6 guys that, let's say, they decided to put, you know, on a short stick or they thought maybe one guy couldn't carry the ball as well, press them. They'd be, I feel, sadly mistaken because we have enough guys who could run by their matchup. And it's been a lot of fun to play with guys who take such, you know, have such personal accountability in their role on the field. You know, that everyone on our team, on offense at least, and on defense, they have accountability for their own abilities. And you know, when it comes down to having to just, you know, man up and beat your matchup, we have 6 guys who can do that.
Well, last question for me, and I'm going to toss you over to Joe. we've asked Rob and Ned about end-of-game situations, and it's really interesting to me because you guys have a veritable superstar cast on offense. In the last minute of a game, tied, where does the ball go for you? Like, if you're on the field, do you want it? What's the situation, and exactly how do you picture things going, considering you guys have a veritable gluttony of talent on offense? Minute left, what do you do?
I would say it's an in-game decision. I know you're poking for an answer for one or two guys who are definitely going to give the ball. But as you know, and you guys have seen plenty of MLL across, every game plan is different every game, and the way guys catch fire during games changes each week. So there's not a guy, like I said, on my 6-on-6 that, as long as everybody, the other five guys, are spaced out correctly, that I got faith in every other. All other five guys that are out there to, initiate some offense, draw a slide. And then the key is, and as you watched us this weekend, our spacing was great off the ball, regardless of who was carrying it, is who's, where are the guys going to go as he's making that move? Because regardless of who it is, they've proven to have to draw a slide. So I think that, the six guys, all of us six guys that have been playing would want the ball themselves. At one point or another in their career, they played for a team where they got the ball. As much as I'm sure you'd like to hear me say, Paul or Rob or, Ned, if they're having a great game and that matchup is what they've been going to work all game, I'm going to give it to that guy. And if it happens to be me, it happens to be Rob, it happens to be Paul, whoever, it's more of an in-game decision. I'm a very situational player myself, so, we all have a vision of how we want games to go, and it's usually not the last possession of the game.
Hey, Tommy, it's Joe Keegan. How's it going?
Hey, Joe, how you doing? Not too bad.
Doing pretty good. Thanks for joining us.
So last year, your role on the Lizards was a little different than sort of the styles that you played in the past at Syracuse. You played primarily as an off-ball player. How did that role last year help you sort of develop your game and prepare for the sort of offense that you guys are running this year? You keep saying the word spacing. How has that prepared you to play in space?
It brings value to, like you said, to my versatility as where I can go. I like to think that good offense guys, if they're put in random spots, they understand that spot from a lacrosse IQ, and they have the ability to do so when they get there. Obviously, guys are going to have strength, so that will naturally put them in spaces that they want to go to. And the key is getting used to and finding the chemistry of how that's going to work. For me, the off-ball thing, like you said, a lot of my career has been, I've been a Dodger, an initiator. As far back as high school, I was a majority of a passer and, creator for other players. So to be able to add the off-ball game just allows me to widen my responsibility as an offensive guy. If I'm dodging to the goal, I want to hope that the other five guys know how to move off ball, because then it's not going to make a difference for me. They're going to I'll draw a slide, and I won't be able to move it quick enough because they don't know how to go. The same thing goes for when I don't have the ball. I just kind of look as, all right, how would they want me to – would they want me just to stand there and get in their way? Or would they rather me, learn how to cut and learn how to catch the ball moving somewhere else, or go set a screen to get someone else open? So I think that it just brings I don't use the versatility word again, but it brings another dimension that a defender, another coach can't just say, hey, Palisak's just going to be off ball, don't worry about him dodging, just kind of find him when he's off ball, that type of thing. It allows for defenders to really not know where I'm going to be at any point.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on it, versatility. I always say, good teams have players who complement each other, right? They all have different styles and can do other things well, but the great teams have interchangeable parts. Like, everybody can do two or three things well. And I think that's sort of what we're seeing from you guys this year. I mentioned you were primarily a Dodger in the past, and last season a lot of your play was off ball. But this year you're initiating, it seems, it's only been 2 weeks, but it seems like you're initiating a little more than you were in the past. And,
of course.
Last season, and you guys have two new off-ball players who you brought in, Mike Stone and Matt Poske. How has it been playing with them and just sort of seeing them move without the ball when you're dodging from behind the cage?
It's good. It's nice to see you. But what was that second name? Paske and
Mike Stone.
Oh, Mike Stone. Yeah, of course. You know what? I played Mike Stone, and that's the other thing with this team is each guy has, you know, some sort of connection to where they either play with each other, you know, have similar backgrounds to where they're coming from. You know, like me and JoJo at Syracuse, or you know, Ned at Duke. They run a similar style offense, that type of thing. But with Stone and Paske's the type of guy that you kind of just need to see a stick. You know, he may not move very much, and you know, some good crease guys will tell you they don't need to, because they only need to make one or two steps when their guy makes a move, and as long as I do my job to draw that slide, you know, I can trust that I can throw it in there, and as long as I see his stick or his body placing the right way, he's going to catch and throw it in. And, since Matt's been around, he's proven to do so. So it's nice, like you said, as a Dodger, to have that that guy that you know is not, you know, some guys will catch a wide-open pass in the middle and not know what to do with it. He can do it with someone all over him. As far as Stone goes, Mike, he's the same way. I played a little bit of indoor. We got to play on the Boston Rockhoppers a couple years back in the indoor league. So I got to play Mike there, and I really got to see his hands and how soft he is with catching the ball in tight spaces. And he's a lot like me, I think, in the fact that he's been known more to shoot and score goals, but I've seen him break down his defender with ease, and he's one of the last guys I'd want to go throw a short stick at also. So, you know, Mike is he moves. He's like I said, he's a lot like me. He moves when he's in the position. He plays the situation. If he's in your way and he knows he's got to cut through, or if he knows he's got to pick, he's going to pick the right situation to do. And it's been nice to start to make that chemistry, you know, build, because we've only had a couple weeks here to really actually practice it.
Yep. And last question from me before I send it to Tom. In Rabel's sort of documentary that he's doing on YouTube called The Move,
yep.
He had a scene at training camp where he sort of addressed you guys. I think it was either right before or right after the Outlaws scrimmage, where he just sort of told you guys that in the past he'd been competitors, but he has an enormous amount of respect for you guys. And I guess after watching you guys put up 11 goals in the first quarter of the second game that you played together, it seems like there wasn't really much of a period where you guys had to start to gel, you know? It seems like you guys hit the ground running for a team with, I mean, Paske, Stone, Rabel, a fairly good amount of new parts. Mm-hmm. Was it all as easy as it seems, or was there sort of a learning period through training camp?
Yeah, definitely. The scrimmage, if you watch the Denver scrimmage, we were sloppy at times, and the initial let's go play against someone else is it's exciting for everybody, because the off seasons are pretty lonely as far as competition against other professionals go. So I think that time is still to be determined. We had some sloppiness, I think, even in the game this past weekend in a couple different times. So there's still work to be done. But, the fact that we were able to put on a good amount of time of just good spacing, good passing, good dodging, all that stuff, it just shows that it can be done. And then that's what we need to build on and, you know, try to set that as the standard and, you know, try to always play like that. And I know that I just don't think that it's enough time to tell as far as the learning period goes, because I think that the way the MLL works and the amount of time they let you have before even playing your first game is not really enough to tell, where the learning period really was. I think that was a great start. I think that was, like I said, we did all the right things. The guys were moving with each other, not worrying too much about where they're supposed to be or, you know, really just acting naturally in the 6-on-6. So I think that we're still in that learning curve. You know, we find a way to not score goals against Rochester, then the 11 goals we scored in the first quarter this past weekend, it really means nothing. You know, you just take a step back. So we really just got to take, you know, even if it's a small step forward in the next week at, you know, putting more of a full game together. It's a little easy when you get up 11-0 to kind of take a step back and say, all right, we're doing fine and be content. But I think with this group, we're professional from each person that, you know, it'll just be one step at a time type of thing.
Hey, Tommy, it's Tom. How's it going?
Thanks, not too bad.
You've been one of those guys your whole career since you came into the league, since your time at Syracuse, since your time at Hopkins. When it came to going towards the goal, you went with reckless abandon. You didn't care about your body. You were going full out towards the goal. And, you know, you guys are playing for a paycheck that's less than the bill at the restaurant James made me pay for on Friday night. How is it to wake up Monday morning after a game like that? You know, do you just feel better after a dominating win?
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. You put in a lot of work, like you said, for, you know, the paychecks that we are getting. You put in a lot of work year round to keep your body in shape and conditioning yourself and shooting and lifting. Because, you know, when you're in college, you have all the time, and someone's going to tell you always making you do it. And when you get to that pro level, to keep yourself up, it takes some good motivation and dedication in the off season. So, you know, as far as getting that victory on Sundays, it makes it worth your while. You know, when you're able to, you know, put in a good day's work, and you know that you put your best foot forward with your conditioning and your stick skills and that type of thing. So it's rewarding to finally see a payoff after the long off season.
And you kind of hit on this with Joe's last question, but you got Rochester again this week. This wasn't a close game. I mean, there's no nice way to put it. You guys really beat them up badly. How do you personally stay motivated for a rematch against the team that you just did that to?
It's kind of the same thing. You know, you let that off season now, going into my fourth season now. You have that off season to start thinking about how you want to approach each week. And you know, nothing's going to change for me as far as I'm concerned. Rochester's still another professional organization with, you know, good history, good wins, and plenty of good players. And that doesn't mean that, you know, maybe they had one bad day and they're going to come back ready, you know, to put their best foot forward this weekend. You know, I kind of, nothing's going to change for me. I have a workout regimen that I put myself through week in and week out that I think is going to work and will be the one that will be able to put me through the playoffs and into the championship. You know, as far as personnel goes, you handle that, you know, as they come. And we got a glimpse at them this weekend for who they're going to have out there. So we know that. So, you know, I'll watch the film. I'll make sure that I'm up to date with who's who and, you know, how we got to approach them. But I'm ready to, you know, we came so close with the championship last year and we've been building this team for a couple years. I don't have any time now at this point to even think, all right, hey, we're just going to run all over these guys or, you know, just assume that I'm going to get a win, because each week it really is earned regardless of what happened the weekend before, because everybody plays each other differently and they could bring a different effort on the road this week.
And a last one for me, and I'll let James finish up. If I put the Lizards against an all-star team made up of all-star players from the seven other teams combined, how many goals do you think you guys would win by?
Oh man, that's a tough one to answer, because it's so early in the season. I know we got a lot of hype and you know, a lot of backing after this win. I don't know that I can answer it. There's some good defenders out there. There's a couple good goalies, but you know, I want to think that no matter who steps on the field this year, we're trying to score, you know, 15 plus goals and you know, really pile them on for whoever stands out there.
Well, Tommy, we really appreciate you coming on. Appreciate the time. Continued success, and good luck the rest of the season. Hopefully you guys are able to continue the momentum, and we wish you the best of luck. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for spending some time, and have a great week. We look forward to seeing you in action this weekend.
Cool. Thanks, guys. No problem. Thanks for having me.
That's probably Palasek. It's kind of amazing to hear the perspective of someone who is not talked about a whole lot, but can make a huge impact. Like, you hear the confidence that he has about his game, and I think it's justified, because you look at what he did this past weekend, and it's amazing the fact that he scores five goals, and yet I mean, admittedly so, the first questions are about, like, how do you work with all of these big guys? You know, it's kind of a weird situation for him. I kind of get closing thoughts about this game, and Tom, I'm going to throw it to you, because, as you said, this game wasn't close. And as a Rochester fan, like, I kind of want to throw it to the other side. Like, if you're Rochester, what do you take from this game? Do you take any positives? Do you consider this a anomaly? Like, if you're anyone associated with the Rochester organization, what do you tell your team moving forward to next weekend? Because they're going to have to play this team again. What do you say?
They need to forget about the last game. I mean, let it go, move on, forget it ever happened, act like it didn't, and move on. Let's get on to next week. Let's change up who's potentially going to be out there, and do our best. You know, you just continue to do as much as you possibly can. There were some, it's tough to say bright spots in the second half, but, you know, Rochester continued to play in this game, so that's a good sign. As far as Tommy goes, you know, what a guy. It's sad that he, you know, everybody talks about Pinnell and Rabel and Crotty, but you know what? He can hang with any one of them guys. He is a terrific player. He's a terrific person off the field. And, you know, New York is just so loaded that they have a guy who would start for any other team in this league, any single team, as a guy who doesn't get nearly enough credit for them because of who else they have. But he makes them a better team, and he might have been the best player on the field for them on Sunday. He played that good, and he has the skill set to make those plays.
Yeah, I mean, just as far as a personal story is concerned, I know, Tom, you were with me in Charlotte whenever the All-Star game was in town, and Tommy's grandparents were sitting in the lobby, and I know Tim Thomas and I played cards with them for like an hour, and they were just the most delightful people, and they love their grandson, and the whole family is just someone who I root for. So I think that anything Tommy does is just going to be something that we're going to tout on this website forever. But Joe, I want to get your final impact on this game, and I kind of want to throw the exact same question to you, because we've talked about New York, we've talked about how dominant they were. Is there anything positive that Rochester pulled from this game for you?
Not really, no. I really can't think of anything. I mean, the fact that Greg Renly and Have Mercy on Adam Rant after he inadvertently hit him where no guy wants to get hit, I guess that's a bright spot, that Greg Renly didn't just tear him apart right on the field right there. But we're going to say all the cliche stuff, like you should have a short-term memory, put this game behind you, and every week's a new week. But, it's just really tough task to go into New York after you just let up 11 first-quarter goals to them. I'm sure, like Tom said, Rochester continued to fight. They're a proud group. They're not going to roll over. They have a lot of players on that team. They're going to come into New York this weekend, and it should be a better game. It should absolutely be a better game than it was, but it's up to the coaching staff and the captains in that locker room to sort of get them back on track to make it the good game that it should be, because these teams aren't 19-9 different, you know, they're not that far apart, but they were last weekend, so it's up to the Rattlers to make sure that they're not that far apart again this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 10-point difference is a little misleading. I think that New York played really well, but with that being said, speaking of playing well, I do want to welcome in Anthony Kelly of the Denver Outlaws, who basically, Tom and I were in Ohio, and we kept on referencing the fact that there was one guy who dominated the entire playing field, and it's this gentleman. And so, Anthony, I want to welcome you into the show. Thanks for taking the time. And I'm going to go ahead and start you off and just say the fact that Tom and I were literally a couple yards from what you were doing, and the third quarter, you didn't lose a faceoff. So at some point in time, when you see like 4 and 5 people moving in towards you, at some point in time, Anthony, like, is it almost like an overwhelming sense of confidence whenever you just see a bunch of guys coming in? Do you just assume you're going to win it? Like, are you looking in the crowd? Like, how amazing is it winning all those faceoffs?
I guess I never really looked at it like that. It's just one of those things where, I've just kind of going out and doing my thing, and there's days I guess you just get in a little more of the zone than the next, you know, and I guess it's always more of an advantage for the guy that's been out there. It's always tough to be that third or fourth guy that the coach just says, hey, go out there and give it a shot, you know, and, those guys are kind of in panic mode. They don't know any of the timing, any of that stuff, and, you know, I'm already grooving at that point in the game. So, you know, I don't envy those guys going in there at that point. But at the same time, I mean, I'm just focused on doing what I'm doing and just doing the best that I can for my team.
Well, one fun thing that Tom and I were watching, everyone seemed to be just kind of gearing up against exactly how you're going to be able to go about doing anything. And we've talked about the fact that you and Greg have been – kind of the stalwarts of being face-off guys, and you guys are kind of an elite class. How much of that do you really kind of go into a game with? Like, how much experience do you think makes, you know, almost like an intimidation factor? Because you're a big dude, and when you're going up against Eric O'Brien and everyone else that Ohio had this weekend, like, you had at least a couple inches and a couple hundred pounds of muscle as far as I was concerned. Like, how intimidating was that for them? And, like, how big is it having the experience that you have moving forward as far as, like, having each and every face-off against these guys?
Yeah, experience definitely goes a long way, you know what I mean? I'm pushing, I'll be 35 next month, so I've been doing this for a long, long time, you know, longer than anybody in the game. And, it is funny to me sometimes to see these kids come out and they're, you know, right out of college and stuff. And, where I'm 14 years older than these guys and have been facing off at a high level when these kids were back in middle school. You know what I mean? So, when you put it in that kind of perspective and you look at how many more, you know, live professional face-offs I've had than a lot of these guys, you know, that experience definitely comes into play. And then ultimately, like you said, I mean, you know, as far as confidence goes, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, I'm confident in my body of work that I've put in my entire career, on and off the field, you know, get myself prepared. So I don't really overthink it. I just kind of rely on, taking that positive attitude, knowing that I've trained as hard or harder than anybody out there. And, that I'm ready for every game that comes in every Saturday or Sunday or whatever day it may be.
Well, last question for me, and I'll throw you over to Joe, but couple times this past weekend, you got the ball. It was raining. I mean, conditions were terrible. Everyone was chanting about Eric O'Brien and kind of shouting stuff at you. How great was it, the fact that you were able to do as well as you were and be able to lead your team to a victory and be able to really get some key possessions late in the game whenever Ohio was able to make it close?
Yeah, you know, it's good. It's kind of funny. Actually, Eric O'Brien and I are actually really good buddies, believe it or not. So, you know, I live in Ohio, and, we're both Buckeyes. I'm a little bit older, so I missed him in his time. But, you know, his buddies were just razzing me and trying to give me a hard time. But, you know, I always laugh. I'm one of those guys. It's kind of, you know, I don't say a lot when I play. I don't talk a lot of smack. Just not really what I do. I just kind of go out and do what I do. And, I'm one of those guys that you kind of don't want to poke the bear, so those guys came out chirping me on a megaphone at the start of the game, and, I guess it turned up the intensity a little bit and focus, kind of get me ready to do my thing. And, it's always good when you can go out there and have a dominating day. And, it's easy for me to sit here and talk to you guys, but I'm a big I'm a big believer in my unit and my group that I'm out there with. And, I have some awesome wing guys, across the board, and we always game plan and we talk, and those guys have, all the confidence in me, and I have all the confidence in them to, do the right things that we talk about and get to the right spots. And I think we have a lot of success as a unit, and that's something I take pride in. I think, I think there's kind of a lost art of using the wing play and using the wingmen and incorporating them into what we're doing. You know, a lot of the faceoff guys now are so focused on, you know, just getting the ball to themselves and just getting that initial possession. But, you know, I always look at the big picture and look at, you know, trying to get the ball up and out and to the most open guy on the field, whether it be me or another wing guy, which is going to give us the best ability to get that ball down into the offensive zone to actually have a good, solid possession. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, it doesn't do you any good to win a faceoff and then a guy strips you and takes it away. You know, it looks good on the stat sheet, but it doesn't mean anything, you know, in the big picture of the game. So I've never really been a big, you know, I never really focus on stats, never focus on my ground balls and those type of things. You know, I focus on the big picture of doing the best that I can and knowing that my teammates have all the confidence in the world in what I do and that I'm going to go win all the big ones that I can for us and that we're going to ultimately win the game, you know, and then do what we were able to do last year with winning the championship. You know, those are the big things that matter to me, not, you know, leading face-off percentage, those things. You know, yeah, those things are all great, but at the end of the day, it's about what I do with my team and winning.
Hey, Anthony, it's Joe Keegan. How's it going?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Doing well. This weekend, Gregor Henlian tweeted that when you rotate face-off men at this level, nobody wins. I think he was talking about the Florida launch. They dressed Chris Mattis and Mike Poppleton. What are your thoughts on the two-man face-off rotation? Because a lot of teams have been using it to sort of keep guys fresh, but do you feel like it does that, or do you feel like it keeps you from sort of finding your groove like you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, I mean, I excuse me, I apologize, guys. I'm fighting a little bit of a cold here. You know, I for me personally, I like to just go by myself and just be able to, you know, do my thing and get going. You know, if you ever need a break, you know, you kind of just throw a guy in there. But, you know, granted, every year that goes by, it gets a little tougher, you know, the older you get. You know, wears on you. I mean, we take a beating as the season goes on. It's a pretty grueling, pretty tough position that we go through week in and week out. And, you know, but I think back to, you know, when I was first playing in the league before we even had long stick middies. And, you know, those games were pretty high scoring where, you know, you're looking at 40 faceoffs a game, and those were tough days. So now, you know, the games aren't as high scoring. I mean, I think with one player more than capable to go out there and handle them all. I think really, you know, it's coming down to a lot of teams just trying to find the right guy. You know, and I think a lot of these teams are just testing multiple players because they haven't really found the answer yet, you know, and they're in a tough spot. So they need to give these guys an honest, fair look. And really, from a coach's perspective, you know, the only way to really do that is to give these guys an opportunity. So I see that, but from a player side, you know, it makes it very difficult. And I don't envy those guys that are, you know, they're looking over their shoulder the whole time. You know, they're thinking, oh, man, if I jump, you know, I might not get back in the rest of the game or I have a procedure or whatever it is. And a lot of times these guys end up psyching themselves out. And, you know, they never get a chance to get in that rhythm. So, I think I see both sides of it. You know, I see it from a coach's perspective, but ultimately – I'm a big believer, if you really want to look at these guys, you know, and you're trying to figure it out, let one guy play one game, let the next guy play the next game, and then make your decision from there. You know, dressing two, three guys, it just makes it really tough.
If you're going against one of those teams that dresses multiple guys, is there any value from their side that you have to sort of, I guess, scout two different guys or be prepared for two different guys? Or are you just excited to be going up against, like you said, guys that are fighting for jobs and maybe overthinking stuff and not playing relaxed and focused on other stuff other than just the game at the X?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, again, at the end of the day, it's just about going on focusing on what I'm doing, you know, and I've been doing this long enough to have a pretty good handle on most of the guys in this league and what they're doing. And, you know, most of the time it's just about executing on my end. And, you know, you know, if there are two guys, then it's just a matter of just going out there and you just got to be prepared for different things and different looks. You know, obviously everyone's a little bit different. But the one, the one big, you know, benefit to being the only guy going, you know, you're kind of getting in that rhythm and you're able to get going and staying warm where, you know, you're not sitting on the sideline for, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes sometimes before you get back in there. You know, so I think that's definitely an advantage. I mean, I think the only advantage to having two is if it's a super high scoring game. Let's say you get, you know, it's a shootout where it's like 19 to 20, something like that, where, you know, it gives you the ability to have a fresh guy in the hole, you know, ready to go as that game goes on. You know, there might be some times where, you know, you rattle off 3, 4, 5 goals in a row. You know, that last faceoff gets pretty tough, you know, before you have a TV timeout or something like that.
Yep. And one of the things we were talking about was that teams will use that two-man rotation because they're sort of trying to find their guy. It's like an audition. And I've always felt that the face-off specialist is the toughest position to crack a lineup in this league. I mean, Brendan Fowler was obviously dominant at Duke, and then last year as a rookie, he was 43%. How is that learning curve? I mean, what does it take to sort of make that jump from NCAA to MLL? Because obviously you've seen your fair share of rookies come through the league, probably dominated, and you might have even, I mean, been responsible for kicking some of them out of the league. So what are some of the characteristics you see in the guys who stick in this league?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely been it's been a tough road for a lot of guys. If you really look at the history, I was talking to you know, one of the guys the other day. They were asking me about that, and you know, I said it's kind of interesting when you look at rosters over the last, you know, 5 years and the guys that have been there, and you know, there haven't been a lot of guys to be able to kind of break through. You know, like you said, there's, you know, a number of players that have come out of the college ranks, you know, in the top, you know, whatever it was, 5, 10, and not been able to make it at all. You know, and I think the guys that have stuck through it, you know, there's a lot of guys that have been resilient, have stuck with it. They've learned, they've asked a lot of questions from, you know, guys in the league, and they've continued to work. And, you know, it's one of those things where they looked at it and said, you know, hey, I want to get there, and I'm not going to have too much pride, and I'm going to go on, I'm going to be a practice guy, I'm going to learn from whoever's in front of me, I'm going to push that guy, I'm going to help my team, and I'm going to get reps at that level, and I'm going to watch those games. And, you know, a lot of those guys are getting an opportunity, like, you know, Bunker is getting an opportunity this year. You know, he's been around for, you know, a number of years, played on, you know, a number of teams. He's kind of been always the number two, number three guy, and, you know, he's paid his dues. You know, Ortolani was like that for a number of years. You know, I think there's a bunch of guys that you could kind of, you know, pick and choose in there. You know, some of them maybe not have earned a full-time position, but enough that they made a name for themselves. And, you know, I think right now, at this point in the season, you know, I think there's a number of opportunities out there for some guys to be able to get in. You know, I think this is probably the first year in the last, like, 3 years here where, you know, I think there's definitely some windows there for guys to pounce on an opportunity. So just depend on what they make of it.
Hey, Anthony, it's Tom. Great game Sunday, I guess it was. It was fun to watch.
Thank you.
In a game like that where they trot out three different guys, I mean, you've seen it all in your seasons. How much do you even pay attention to the guy who's coming out across from you?
Oh, I'm always paying attention. I'm always paying attention. Just you know, you may change where I'm going to go. I might change my plan a little bit, not a whole lot, but, you know, maybe just have a little different plan in place. So, you know, it's just one of those things as I'm walking out, just take a look over the shoulder, see who's trailing behind, and just get yourself ready for that next one. You know, obviously looking at, like, for instance, what I mean is, you know, looking at these guys, you know, O'Brien, he's a pretty big boy. You know, he's deceptively large. He's probably about 230, 240. You know, and then Dottillo's a little bit smaller. So, you know, it's two different kind of styles and characteristics. You know, and then Bernhardt, who is just a great athlete, you know, and they're just trying to get him to scrap it up and fight for the ball. So, you know, a couple different outlooks there and scenarios that, you know, you just want to be prepared for.
And we've seen the position evolve. We've seen some of the greats come and go. I've been around the league since the beginning. I've always been a fan. But you've got 10 seasons under your belt. Of those 10, you had 3 seasons where you were under 50%, and none of them were far from that. How have you been able to go through so many different styles, through so many different teams, and still find tremendous success?
you know, I think a lot of it is just continuing, like I said earlier, you know, just continuing to work and focus on the things I need to, and just continue to try to get better and continue to evolve, you know, as the game goes. And, you know, you can always get better. I'm a big believer if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And, you know, I always try to look for little things to, you know, benefit myself, you know, along the way, and, you know, continue to, you know, have different successes along the way. And, you know, it's funny, I look at some of the old stats too, going back, you know, the league has done a much better job probably the last 5 years, but I don't know if you guys remember going way back, there were some pretty bad statistical errors along the way there. And, you know, so I don't put a lot of stock into the numbers from back then and what it is. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, for me, I'm a guy that just goes out and, you know, I know my teammates have confidence in me and my coaches, and, you know, I'm going to go out there and give it my all. And that's all that really matters to me. You know, going back and looking at some numbers that a high school kid was doing on the sideline, you know, they're probably not very accurate from back in like 2006. You know, it doesn't mean a whole lot of stock in my book, but, and again, great teammates and having, you know, just a great game plan. You know, I think a lot of times game planning on the face-offs is overlooked. And, you know, that's something I take a lot of pride in with all my wing guys. And, you know, I give those guys a ton of credit. And, you know, for all my successes, it goes to them. And, you know, when things go bad, I take all the responsibility, you know. So they know that, and we work together to put in a good plan to be successful. So
we actually met championship weekend in 2013 when you basically exploded your hamstring and still played the game despite not barely being able to run off the field. You come back the next year, get your championship, everything goes well. I mean, I got to ask, why come back this year?
Why not? Let me ask you that. I mean, why wouldn't I? You know, I mean, I got my championship, you know, it's the ultimate goal, but, you know, a lot of people ask me that, and I say, well, I'm still performing, I'm still playing at a high level, and I'm having as much fun as I did the first day I stepped on the field. So why should I stop, right?
That's a great answer, and yeah, the love of the game is truly what it's all about. Is that, you know, how long then? I guess, you know, every year everybody asks Nicky Polanco that, and all the guys who are older in the league. I mean, do you keep going till you can't anymore? Is that going to be the case?
You know, I don't know. I haven't really thought that far ahead. You know, I went all around and around with it this past year, and you know, I was getting a lot of people kind of pushing me, saying, yeah, you should hang it up, and, you know, what a great way to go out, and, you know, go out on top, and you've earned it, and you played all these seasons. You know, and when it came down to it, I just, like I said, I just, number one, I love it, and I think in pro sports, I guess anything in life, if you're not performing, it's easier to walk away, and if you're not having fun, I think it's really easy to walk away. But if you're able to do both of those things and have both of those things in place, you know, I don't see why there's any reason not to. You know, it's just kind of a part of who I am, and I enjoy doing it. I love being around the guys. I love, you know, being able to go out there and play. I think now at this point in my career, you know, pushing 35, you know, you never know when it could be your last day and your last game. So it's something I kind of have a different perspective where, you know, I never really take it for granted. And every time before I go out for a game, I take that extra second before I put on my jersey just to appreciate that moment, you know, and having that right and that chance to go out there and be able to perform and, you know, be able to do what I love, and knowing that window is slowly closing, I guess quickly closing is a better term for it. You know, and that each moment I get out there, it could be my last. And, you know, just to be able to go out and do my best. And, you know, I always take pride in being a team guy and trying to carry myself the right way and leaving a good mark for the sport itself and representing the MLL in the best way possible, you know, and try to share my experiences with the younger guys and do anything that I can to, you know, help the league and help these young guys, you know, along the way as well.
And a last one for me, you have, since you moved over to Denver, you know, 2.5, almost, you know, counting this year, about 3 full seasons ago, you basically had the same face-off unit. Is that a key to the success? You talk about them a lot. You credit the union, but how much does it help to have, you know Matt Bach that's going to be there every single week and be on the one wing?
Oh, it's great. I mean, Maddie's awesome, and he and I have an awesome, we got a unique bond and a unique connection where, like I said, I have all the confidence in the world in him and vice versa. And, I love using him and we just have I think the big thing with Matt is that, he has that trust in me. So he might not like where I put him and the game plan that we maybe have going in. But he always trusts me and I always know where he's going to be. And then we just talk and we, as the game goes on, we talk and we'll make minor adjustments. And if he says something, then, I listen and we'll tweak it and take it from there. But, we just have that confidence in each other where, sometimes I mess up or, sometimes he'll miss an easy ground ball and he's apologizing, but, it's part of the game and you just move on. And, I know the next 5 he's going to have for me, So, he's definitely a big asset. And yeah, it definitely helps to have, the same guys that you're comfortable with and having that comfort level. But, ultimately, I guess it all kind of starts and stops with the face-off guy, to a certain degree. But yes, to answer your question, the short answer here is, yeah, it definitely helps to have a strong unit and confidence in one another.
Well, we've been talking to the, world champion Denver Outlaws face-off specialist, Anthony Kelly. Anthony, thank you for taking the time to discuss everything that you've been going through with us. Continued success for you and your team. And like I said, I speak for Tom, and it was amazing to watch you work this past weekend. And we wish you nothing but the best. And thanks for coming on. Thanks for doing the time. And like I said, continued success moving forward.
Hey, thank you, guys. I appreciate having me on.
Thank you. And I actually want to kind of jump real quick into other games because we only have 30 minutes left. And so at some point in time, we do have to talk about Florida and Chesapeake. And they're going to play each other again next week, which is kind of funny because we really didn't go over a whole lot of what they were doing this past weekend. They actually had a really good game. Joe, I actually want to kind of toss it right over to you. They're going to play each other next weekend. So we're going to kind of transition right into previews. Because the first week of every team, I feel like, is kind of a trial period. And so I don't really think the first week for these two teams, for Chesapeake and Florida, was indicative of what they're going to be doing going forward. So this next weekend, they're going to meet each other again. How big do you think it is that these two teams didn't meet week one at all? Neither team played. Week two, they play each other. Week three, they play each other. What did you make of their previous game, and what do you expect moving forward as far as the preview is concerned?
I touched on it earlier in the last game on Sunday. The huge issue for Florida was the clearing. I thought Brett Queener played more than well enough to win that game. He had 25 saves, and he had as many goals as Florida's offensive midfielders combined. He just didn't get the production. And they didn't really have the possessions. I mean, they had a lot of trouble clearing the ball. Chesapeake, I thought it was an impressive performance. Again, this is the first game they've played. Neither of these teams played week one, so we can't jump overboard. But I just thought it was a really solid team effort from them. I mean, Michael Evans got hurt. Kyle Sweeney went down to close defense, and I mean, basically, he took the top matchup. He, with all respect to Casey Powell, Kieran McArdle was the guy that Coach Cottle was the most scared of going into that game. He said on the coach's call last week that he thought McArdle was the most underrated player in the league and a lock for the next world team. And, he's probably right. McArdle's an awesome player. Nikki Polanco drew the Casey Powell assignment, and Kyle Sweeney took Kieran McArdle after Mike Evans went out with an injury. And then Dan Burns, a short stick midi, picked up a pole to replace Kyle Sweeney. So they just, I mean, survived and advanced. It's week one, but you kind of get a scrap for early wins in this league, because if you don't get them, I mean, they're going to be messy. Rochester's win at Charlotte was messy, but it's a win, and it's going to be huge at the end of July, early August, when the playoff seedings take its shape. You have to win those games that maybe you shouldn't win, but I mean, maybe neither team should be winning. Neither of these teams are playing at midseason form, but somebody has to win, and Chesapeake pulled it out largely because of athletic midfielders. Matt Abbott played great, as always. I mean, he's one of the top players in the league. And the return of Jovan Miller. I said that he was going to get a shot to make his mark on this team and earn a roster spot on this show. And Tom Bovee left, and Jovan Miller played a hell of a game. I think, two assists. He caused a couple turnovers on the defensive end, and he'll absolutely be dressing down in Florida this week, and he has a chance to go back out and do that again.
I mean, one of the funnier things about week two, I guess week one for Chesapeake, is how great Jovan played, because Tom, even as Tom and I were together, which Tom and I don't really get to see each other that often, but even as the game was happening, Tom kept on lamenting about how great Jovan was playing, which is a pure delight to me. But I do want to go into this game sans Jovan and just think about how this game really impacts the rest of the league moving forward, because you see these two teams play right now, and Chesapeake beat Florida week one for this team. They play each other immediately after. How important is this game for both teams? Because we don't really know what we're getting out of these teams moving forward as far as week two is concerned. And so how big is this game in week three for us, week two for them? How big is the rematch? Because they're not going to play each other again. And so I just question, like, the scheduling, and I question what they're going through. But how big is this game for both these teams?
Well, I mean, anytime you can potentially get a season sweep of a team, your first two games of the season, that's big. I mean, you get the upper hand on them. You're going to have put yourself in a great position, or you're going to even the tables. I mean, either one of these teams is walking out 0-2, or they're both walking out 1-1. So you want to at very least split every season series. I mean, that puts you .500 on the season, but the way this first game went, and the way I guess I expect this weekend's game to go, is Florida's going to walk away looking for answers and waiting on their rookies, and Chesapeake is going to walk away with another win, and now all of a sudden they're 2-0, and we're talking about them as a team that has an early track, maybe too early, but at least the inside edge in a playoff position. And I mean, that's absolutely crazy, and it's because of how the schedule worked out.
Yeah, I think it's a travesty to try to schedule these two teams this close, because later on in the season, they're going to be a lot more established. And I think that's kind of an interesting subplot moving forward, is exactly how easy games could possibly be in the early portion of the season. But neither here nor there for Boston and Charlotte, because Charlotte coming off a, I don't want to say a heartbreaking loss, because they deserve to lose a game against Rochester. And then Boston, who played really well and is about ready to hopefully cement what they're doing throughout the course of the season. Joe, I want to toss it to you. I want to just talk about what's interesting about this matchup, because you have a Charlotte team that we've talked about, and we talked about 2 weeks ago, that they cannot score. And I think that really came to fruition, because when you look at exactly how they were shooting, Sawyer takes a lot of their shots, and once you
once you talk to a lot of defenders around the league, he shoots right-handed. That's it. And he's the only one who really takes a big amount of shot for Charlotte. How big is this matchup for Boston and Charlotte, and what do you expect to kind of see whenever the matchup happens?
Yeah, I mean, like Tom said, it's important to start getting these wins early. It's going to be a big matchup. I mean, we're going to see how for real Boston is after that win against Denver, which might be even more impressive after we just saw what Denver did in Ohio. And we're going to see if Charlotte can rebound, because I don't think they're as bad of a team as some people are making them out to be. I think they're absolutely no worse than Florida. And, you know, at the end of this week, we might be saying that they're playing better than Ohio, who's a playoff team. Like, the standings change in this league so quickly. Like Tom mentioned, that getting a season sweep is nice for the inside track for playoff position, but, it's a sweep against Florida. We don't know what kind of team Florida is. That maybe everybody's going to get the season sweep against Florida, and then that sort of negates whatever Chesapeake did in these first couple weeks. I think the interesting matchup, like last week, week one, I should say, when it was John Wade and Justin Ward, it's going to be Chad Wiedmeyer and Justin Ward. Chad Wiedmeyer was Defensive Player of the Week, week one, and Justin Ward basically is not just Charlotte's primary initiator, but their only initiator. I mean, he's the guy who can create offense with the ball on his stick without a pick. He can do it himself. I mean, for others, but he can draw slides and dissect defenses. And if he's not having as good of a game as he was in the second half of last season, Charlotte's going to have a lot of trouble. That first game was the first time that Ward, Dion, and Sawyer got to play together. Ward coaches at Georgetown. I think he had a Saturday game, flew in Sunday, played the game, and it didn't go wonderfully. Charlotte, like you said, struggled to put up goals, and they got the early loss. But I think we're going to see a team that's hungry to prove themselves. They didn't get much transition offense in week one, Charlotte, but I think they will end up getting some against the Cannons this week. They have great defensive midfielders. I mean, Kevin Drew's one of the best in the league, and then we'll see if Palacone's playing, but Josh Hawkins and Palacone can push the ball from defense to offense better, as well as anyone in the league. So the goals should come. I mean, it's not like we keep saying, how is Charlotte going to score? Like, we know the ways that they could score. Like, Ward drawing a slide and feeding a feeder like Dion or Sawyer, or like a pick up top for like a midfielder just flying down the alley like Trepuka or Sawyer, if he's sort of carrying up top and dodging from there, because he seems to like to do a lot of his work above the wings or in transition. Like, there are a few different ways that Charlotte can score. It's just, will they capitalize on those opportunities? Because they didn't in week one. And, I mean, Boston is a strong defensive team so far. They shut down Jeremy Sievert. They shut down Eric Law. It's going to be a tough matchup. And, it's the only non-rematch of the week. Doesn't make it the only interesting game, but it's definitely going to I think have playoff implications, because it can sort of tell us if Boston is legit and if Charlotte is a legit non-threat.
Yeah, I think before throwing this to Tom, like, I'm going to give my quick 2 cents, which, you know, I mean, you say ways they could score, and you say Justin Ward can do this. There was none of that in the first game. And that's the thing where I think that you got to really worry about what Charlotte's doing.
because their defense is not – their defense is okay, I guess. Like, if you look at what they're doing, like, Schmidt can guard number one option adequately, not exceptionally, and that's kind of here nor there. Same thing with Flanagan. And their D-middies are okay. Like, Kevin Drew is amazing. But overall, like, this team ebbs and flows through a could-have perspective. And I think that right now, like, they're the worst team in the league. I love this team, but they're the worst team in the league. And it's amazing how this team could possibly move going forward. And even though we're probably going to completely go over the Rochester-New York matchup, Tom, I want to get your impact on this Boston-Charlotte matchup, because this actually impacts our betting scheme, because I think that Boston's going to win. I think that Boston has a better matchup. Tom, what do you think about where these two teams are going? Because it seems like Boston played exceptionally well in their one game so far, and Charlotte played, I mean, I guess, under par. I just don't think they're going to do anything. But moving forward, how do you think these two teams are moving forward?
Sorry, I was actually just checking the Hounds website to see if you can pre-order your Miles Jones jersey yet. That's not available yet. But
I hope so. I want Matt Kavanaugh. Yeah. I want both those guys. Because Miles Jones is not – we heard Miles Jones is not necessarily committed to lacrosse. Let's get Kavanaugh in here. Let's do the damn thing. Let's go. Like, that's all I got to say about that whole thing. Good Lord.
It's actually funny because we were told by a team executive this weekend that Miles Jones might not be committed to lacrosse 100%. So I laughed about that. But Boston looked good. Charlotte looked bad. But it was week one. I'm not going to put too much stock into it yet. Let's see how they improved over the break. We were already told that Charlotte didn't get together. They did not have a practice over the break. I do not know if Boston did. I would assume enough of their guys are local that they would have something, but again, that's an unfair assumption on my part. They both needed to be better. I mean, I think they both need to be better than they did week one to have any shot going forward. But yeah, I agree with you, James. If you're asking me who my pick is in this game, it's definitely Boston.
And so moving forward, I do want to get you guys' opinions about the games this weekend, because there are rematches galore, and there's the Boston-Charlotte game. So real quick, not moving forward too much about what we were just talking about, which weird segue, but either way. Joe, want to get your opinions about all the games. Go ahead and give all of your opinions about New York-Rochester. Do you think they're going to move forward and have a different result? Like, go ahead and give every opinion that you have about all these games within a couple minutes, because we have 22 minutes left.
Yeah, I think the New York-Rochester game is going to be a lot closer than it was last week, but I would still bet on New York to come away with the win, I think, because they're just clicking too.
Tom, what do you think about the New York-Rochester matchup? Because this was bad for your team, and they beat a Charlotte team. Didn't look great. Who do you have in this matchup, New York-Rochester?
Joe jumped all over me week one for saying how Rochester was undermanned, and they're still undermanned. They missed Turi this past week. They missed several players that played week one, and they're already missing several other players. I think they're still undermanned. I don't know how this isn't a New York win. And as a diehard Rattlers fan, it's tough for me to say that they'll be within 5 goals in this game.
Well, the next matchup I want to get to is not the Charlotte matchup. It's actually a repeat of Florida Chesapeake, because kind of an interesting dynamic how these two teams are operating off of. Joe, there was a result the first week. Do you think that Chesapeake and Florida is going to repeat that whenever you flip the home and home? Or who do you have in this game?
I got to say Chesapeake, just because like I said, Florida looked so bad cleaning the ball, and it took 25 saves from Brett Queener to keep that game that close. Like Tom said, it was a blowout without that. So, Chesapeake.
What's amazing in that game is we have a Matt Donowski bet going on, and I am actually a little nervous now because Donowski seems to have a lot more ball presence than what I was thinking initially whenever the season started. And so it makes me a little nervous, as well as about four other bets that Tom and I met. And basically what I'm really nervous about, Tom, is I'm going to give you a jersey that is going to have either your name on it, or you're going to make me wear a jersey with, like, my girlfriend's name on it. I'm really kind of nervous about this whole proposition. But the Chesapeake-Florida game this week, who do you have and why?
I'm with Joe. Chesapeake was significantly better than Florida in week one. I don't see that changing in week two. Cottle will have them prepared again, and they run away with it. And it'll probably be a jersey that says trombone on the back.
Well, either way, I might just go ahead and quit this whole proposition. I might go ahead and quit everything and get out of here before I have to lose this bet. Charlotte does play Boston. And I think these are two teams that no one's really super excited about seeing play each other. But I think that either way, it's going to be indicative about where the two teams are, how this game goes. Joe, who do you have winning this game? I know we've talked about the deficiencies that Charlotte has exhibited. Who do you have winning this game?
I think it's going to be a lot closer than, you guys haven't said your opinions yet, but chances he's not interested. It's going to be an interesting game. I mean, Boston initiated a lot of their offense against Denver from the midfield. And, I mean, we've already been talking about Charlotte's D-middies. It's going to be interesting to see who covers who between Brent Adams, Rob Emery, Max Seabold. Which of those guys gets the shorties, and which shorties do they get? Who is Kevin Drew on? But I think those D-middies will keep it close, but Boston will come away with the win.
Hometown boy saying everything good about Charlotte and then choosing Boston. You got to love that. Patriots Day. My, you know what, Tom, who do you have winning this game, and how do you think the Charlotte-Boston game is going to play out?
I'm going to get wild here. I like the Cannons to win this game. I really do, but I'm picking Charlotte. They have to be better than they were. They have to show something more. I've been tough on them all offseason. I've been against them and said horrible things about them, but it's time for them to step up and show everybody that they're better than I think they are. And I want them to. I really want them to. And it has nothing to do with who they're playing or the bet we made. I'd love to see both of these teams win this game for different reasons. But Charlotte just needs something positive at this point in the season. It's early, and I've already at least opened the case on the panic button. I might have not have pressed it yet, but, you know, the deal or no deal phone's ringing on this team right now.
Well, that gives me a lot of confidence. And by the way, Boston, happy Patriots Day to everybody in Boston, and glad the Sox won this morning and everything like that. I just cannot root for Boston throughout the course of anything. For personal picks, I really don't think Charlotte's going to win a whole lot of games this year. Tom, you and I talked about the fact that I think this is the Miles Jones and the Kavanaugh sweepstakes. I think Wade wants to get his foot in the door right now. And I don't know exactly how this team matches up. I think that there's going to be a lot of interesting games over the weekend. I think that this is going to be kind of a do-or-die weekend for a couple teams because you got to win your home games. And so a couple of these teams have already lost the home opener, and so it's going to be interesting to see exactly how teams rebound. And I think the most interesting teams happen to be the teams that might not be playing this weekend, because I think that Ohio is extremely interesting moving forward. We were able to kind of get a good sense of how this team was working, and we will talk in the future about exactly how replay affected the game this weekend, because I think that's a huge story when you're looking at the league moving forward because of the network coverages. And so I think that moving forward, that's going to be a thing that we're going to be talking about a whole lot. Make sure you guys tune in next Tuesday, 8 p.m., for the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. For Tom Bovee and Joe Keegan, I want to make sure that they both are represented properly. Make sure you guys turn to laxert.com because all of the advanced stats that these guys are doing, it's extremely interesting. So if you have any interest in lacrosse and exactly how defenses and offenses are both lining up, it's extremely interesting to read these guys' articles because there's a lot of information there. And want to make sure that that everyone really pays attention to what they're doing. And so I just want to give these guys the credit they deserve because they work extremely hard. And we'll make sure you guys tune into ESPN3 for all the games. Make sure you guys watch everything. And other than that, we will see you guys next Tuesday, 8 p.m., on Laxert Radio, on MLO Radio, and Laxworm Radio. But either way, everyone have a great week. We will see you guys next week and enjoy the games. Take care.